Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we do have an A9 amendment that we need to put on the bill to get it into the shape that we need it so we can explain it properly.
Is this a technical amendment, not adding any new policy?
Madam Chair, it corrects some, it makes some changes to the policy in the bill that, and most of these have all been worked out with state agencies and the involved folks.
We'll look for
them.
But
we're looking for the amendment.
But we're looking for it. But, Madam Chair, maybe I can just kind of walk through. I believe everybody has a spreadsheet. Maybe I can just walk through where the money provisions are in the bill.
That's fine.
Okay. And we do have a handout for the committee members.
Technique. Throw everything ready to okay for the audience.
Explain what all the numbers
are. Oh, sitting out, ready to go.
Shout till they have it. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, there's let's see here. One, there's nine provisions that actually have a fiscal impact in the bill, and I'll let Ms. Boyd talk about where the money comes from, where it goes to. I'll just real quick run down what these items are. The first item is Senator Rest's bill that deals with the UPA policy, and you'll find those in sections 6, 7, 23, 26, 31, and 90. Six, seven, 23.
They're in them.
26, 31, and 90.
This is all on the handout that was just passed out.
Yes, it's a one-page handout that we have there. Yes. The second provision is one from Senator Ropes, and it deals with these medium-speed electric vehicles that are starting to crop up all around the country. It's kind of for personal transportation and neighborhoods and things like that. We borrow it from going on the highways and places like that. So it's it was well put together. The next provision is Section 33, and that deals with the Office of Pupil Transportation Safety. And we do spend some money to open up this, and this is basically our school bus safety program. The next one is Sections 39, 54, 55. And that is the primary seatbelt bill. And it shows that there is a cost to the general fund in this, but the assumptions that were made in regards to this bill were faulty assumptions. There is actually no cost to this provision. So that's a dispute between the author of the bill and the folks that write the revenue estimates. The next is Section 46, and that deals with the canola hauling permits, and that's a Senator Stumpf bill. Section 52 is more of Senator Olsen's school bus provisions. Section 64 is Ron Senator Latt's suspensions for the driver's license. What's going on right now is we're clogging up the courts with folks who have been repeatedly suspended. And what the intent of the law was just to be suspended one time. But these people get suspended multiple times, and they have to go through the court system to get the suspension taken care of. And it's just clogging up the court system. So we're going to And it was always intended that the person was only suspended one time. We only have one chapter of law to deal with it, which says you will suspend. But that was clearly not the intent. So we're separating, we're making a clear delineation between the two chapters of law that we want the suspension to be dealt with, so that people aren't suspended, and never get their license back. Section 87 is, I believe this was deals with the Lafayette Bridge and making sure that the Lafayette Bridge is transit ready. And I believe that's Senator Metzen's bill. And then the last is a complete streets program that Senator Jungbauer put together, and you'll find that in Section 95.
Ms. Boyd?
Okay. Madam Chair, members, just to briefly go through what the actual numbers of these provisions are. The first provision is on the UPA policy that enables the UPA grant money to be spent and some dynamic shoulder lanes and HOV lanes to be administered. And this shows.
Could you tell the committee what the UPA is?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the Urban Partnership Agreement. It's a federal grant that the state received. There are some matching funds in some bills going through the legislature this session. It shows revenue from tolls to the special revenue fund, and those toll revenues are expended out again to administer the program. And also, the costs are not really covered by the tolls in the first couple of years, at least, so there is an expenditure from the Trunk Highway Fund to make up that portion as well. The medium-speed electric vehicles, this is the only general fund impact of the bill is in this section, and it's actually a revenue impact. We'll be taking in approximately $39,000 in 2009, and that's in sales tax on the estimated number of medium-speed electric vehicles that will be sold. And also, the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund will see some revenue from the registration of these vehicles. The Office of People Transportation Safety will be staffed by State Patrol employees, and that's an expenditure from the Trunk Highway Fund. The first year is higher to cover costs of equipment for the program, and then ongoing costs of about $590,000 for compensation. The primary seatbelts provision would bring in some federal incentive money of $1.6 million in 2008 and approximately $960,000 in 2009. The canola hauling permits, Senator Stump provision, would bring in revenue to the Trunk Highway Fund. The permit is about $850, so that would bring in some revenue, and there's a small expenditure to actually administer the permit program. The rulemaking for Type 3 school buses, that just authorizes the Commissioner of Public Safety to do some rulemaking on Type 3 school buses, and that will be an expenditure in 2009, one time of $328,000 to do that. The driver's license suspensions, the revenue is, the language is actually changed in the A9 amendment that I believe is not yet adopted, the author's amendment, and the language change will actually eliminate this negative revenue line on your spreadsheet here, so that cost will be eliminated. The Lafayette Bridge is a mandate to the commissioner to make sure that when the Lafayette Bridge is worked on that it is LRT ready or transit ready. And the department has estimated that when they do the Lafayette Bridge work in 2010 to 2013, that they will also do some work on river foundations and portions of piers to accommodate that. And you see that there's 2 years of expenditures here from the Trunk Highway Fund. Those expenditures will go out into 2013 and will be $7 million total. And then the complete streets is just two one-time costs to actually do the study, $200,000 in 2009 and $50,000 in 10, and that will be from the Trunk Highway Fund.
Senator Higgins. Senator Murphy.
Use the mic. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, this is a bill, this is actually an idea that Senator Jungbauer came up with, working with a lot of his local folks up in his area, so that we utilize the space inside the right-of-way in a more efficient manner and allow multi-purposes, purpose use on these highways, or I should say these thoroughfares. These are mainly designed for areas where there's a larger volume of traffic. And what And what Senator Jungbauer's idea is that, you know, we need to move beyond the internal combustion engine. Let's put some lanes for bicycles and pedestrians and things like that so that people can utilize the right-of-way safely, whether they want to rollerblade or bike or walk or whatever. And I think it's a pretty good idea. There's a couple changes that we have in regards to that program, and I'm sure it's going to evolve as we move forward. But I think that it's generated a lot of discussion, a lot of positive discussion. Oh, and Senator Jungbauer is here if you want to hear a little more from him.
Senator Thomas, oh, he's coming. Okay. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. There is federal legislation involving the complete streets as well, but basically the overall concept is to use or utilize all the existing easement without gaining more easement and then using multiple lane widths for bus traffic, normal car traffic, and also pedestrian traffic. And one of the simplest ways to kind of explain it is when I was mayor of East Bethel, in order to get more pedestrians to start walking and utilizing the lanes, what we did was we shifted, instead of having two wide shoulders on both sides of the road, we did a 3-foot shoulder on one side that was paved and a 12-foot shoulder on the other side so that kids could ride their bikes and families could walk. So kind of the idea is to make things family friendly. The idea of the study is it's not something you want to put everywhere. So it's not part of the problem is when we look at road designs, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all around the state today. So MnDOT has their specs for MSA roads and different things, and everybody utilizes the same thing. What the complete street study would say is within certain corridors, within cities, you would be able to design an alternative design that would allow for the pedestrian traffic, the bus traffic, the car traffic, all to be within the same road easement and actually utilize that easement better. So there's specifics. National Conference of State Legislators actually has some stuff on their website about the program. There's a lot of specifics at the federal level in terms of design criteria and where you may utilize this. So using it in the overall plan, our MnDOT plan for the state, I think is a good idea so that cities, counties, and the state itself can figure out where and when we might use this kind of a design criteria.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Jungbauer, I just want to compliment you on the work you've done on this. This idea is a very important part of improving the health of our state and is one of the recommendations that was made by the Governor's Task Force on Health Care Reform.
Thank you, Senator Berglund.
Senator Jungbauer.
I'm kind of an adamant person about wellness. I've had issues, for people that don't know, with my back and neck, and have worked my way back into health. And part of it is being able to run, walk, bicycle. And I think that's part that's missing from our communities. As I grew up in East Bethel, we're safe to ride bicycles. And I think I'm actually working on some other programs and things that would get people thinking more about that. But with the potential wellness program in the health reform bill, cities would have access to funds, and this would be kind of a nice tool for them to use in designing walkable and bicyclable communities and getting our families back out there, being able to feel safe while they're staying in shape, doing some of the things we always did as kids. So thank you.
Senator Murphy, you brought – thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Any other questions for Senator Jungbauer? Senator Murphy, you mentioned something about a dispute over the fiscal note in terms of the primary seatbelt. Do you want to explain that to us?
Madam Chair, maybe I should let Ms. Boyd explain. I think I might have been –
I circle a couple times.
Okay, Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair, members, this provision was introduced last year, and there was a fiscal note that showed a small cost to the general fund. The fiscal note on the language that is in the bill today did not generate a cost. There is no general fund cost to this provision as it is now.
And it looks like it brings in money from the federal government.
It does, yeah.
$1.6 million.
And Madam Chair, in that regard, we did miss our opportunity to get approximately $17 million from the federal government to pass a primary seatbelt bill. I have contacted Congressman Obastar's office, and we're in the process of negotiating an agreement so we can get some of that money if we pass it this year.
And that is this 1.6 for sure we'll get, and you're trying to get more than that?
We're trying to get more than that.
Okay.
That was quite a bit less than what we were promised.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, and my understanding is the majority of that would be spent up around the Chisholm area.
Madam Chair, is this the right time for an amendment?
No, Senator Tomasoni, it's not. but I think, Senator Metzen, did you have an amendment?
Oh, yeah. You ready for it? Yeah.
This is the A-12 amendment. It deals with Section 87. I was told we need some new language. The Lafayette Bridge.
Oh, Murphy has it. Senator Metzen, before you offer that, I'm sorry. Senator Murphy's amendment is here, which is his kind of fix-up amendment
okay.
for the bill. Why don't we take that one first? And that is, what is that?
A-11 amendment that I would like to offer.
Senator Murphy moves the A-11 amendment. Let's pass it out. Senator Murphy, you indicated earlier that this was kind of a cleanup amendment with some of the language. Is there anything in here that would change the fiscal note?
Maybe speak to that. The only thing would be some of the special mobile equipment, some of the exemptions. Registration tax, but we'll have to get it passed to you. And after it's passed.
Madam Chair, where this amendment may change the fiscal impact of this bill, only because there's some of the provisions that Senator Jungbauer had in relationship to special mobile equipment may change some of the fees that the department gets in, but it would be negligible in our opinion. I don't think it's a whole lot, put it that way. It would be an impact to the highway user fund.
Okay. And Senator Murphy, is there any new policy items in here?
Madam Chairman, I can walk through this real quick.
Okay.
It won't take very long, but the very first subdivision you see on insurance standards is a MnDOT request, and it changes a must to a may. The rest of the language on pages 1, 2, 3, and most of the way down page 4 are Senator Jungbauer's bill that deals with a lot of these special mobile equipment and the types of registration tax that they have to pay.
And was that in the original bill?
Madam Chairman, there was a version of that in the original bill,
okay.
Yes. And this is just kind of cleaning it up, making it a little clearer. Madam Chairman, on the bottom of page 4, starting with section 27, is a part of Senator Dibble's bill that deals with towing provisions. And the reason that this is in the amendment right now is we didn't pick this up with our conference committee report. This was actually supposed to be part of the bill, but it was kind of left out. And that goes for the next several pages here, over to page 8, I believe. And then we start with some language that deals with spotter trucks. And I believe that this has all been worked out now with DPS and State Patrol and those folks. And then there's an effective date starting down on 8.28. This deals with some changes for the the effective date deals with the spotter trucks, and then on 8:30, that deals with hourly hours of operations for transit for persons with disabilities. And on the next page is more of the spotter truck
what that is.
Language, and then we go down to page 10, starting on lines 24 through 28. This is a weight limit exemption for towers who tow overweight vehicles. And basically what we're doing is we're saying that that every company that has these huge tow trucks, they can pick up an overweight vehicle and travel to the nearest point of basically safety or repair shop. It's going to cost their company $300 to sign up for this, and the towers are very happy with this, and I think the State Patrol feels that this is a good way of getting large vehicles off the road that may be an impediment. They're either broken down or been in an accident. On the bottom, and Madam Chair, this is one change that, and this is the first time that this provision has been heard, members, and it's on the bottom of page 10. It starts on line 33. We had a couple of tickets written to some of our haulers of propane that were making that last run of the year to fill up somebody's heating tanks. And they got a ticket for being overweight because of road restrictions. You know, we want people to be in their homes and have some heat, so I think we need to make an allowance, especially in those years when winter seems to drag on and on and on. People normally go through two or three, sometimes four tanks of fuel. This year it's been an added cost to those folks, and this would allow them to get their delivery of propane or heating fuel.
And Senator Murphy, is there any controversy with this provision?
Madam Chair, not that I'm aware of. And then on page 11 is some cleanup language for Senator Latt's bill, and I kind of explained the problem with the suspensions earlier, and I think that goes on through page 12. And then on page 13, there's the statewide transportation plan. The House language on this is very restrictive to MnDOT, and what we did was we kind of loosened it up a little bit to allow some compromise to be made between MnDOT and some of the local officials when they're dealing with STIP programs and things like that. I think the department still is probably has some concerns with that, but you know, we're trying as best we can to help them with that. On the bottom of page 14 is an Jake braking issue on a certain stretch of highway. Senator Dibble has worked this out with MnDOT and the locals, and then there's some effective dates on the next page. And okay, and Madam Chair, I'll let Ms. Boyd talk about a couple of small fiscal impacts inside.
Madam Chair and members, in the amendment starting 12.31 to 13.3, there is a provision from Senator Latz to revoke a license under certain circumstances, and that is actually in the supplemental budget process. That's in the House language on that side and not in the Senate language, so this is our side of the provision, and that actually brings in about $51,000 a year to the Special Revenue Fund. Later down the page, on page 14, line 15 to line 26, Senator Michelle has a provision for U.S. Women's Open temporary permits. That's a small revenue gain, but it just goes to cover the cost of the permits, and that bill has also gone through this committee separately. And then on 15.5, there's a $1 million appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund for the Office of People Transportation Safety.
Madam Chair.
And was that on the spreadsheet?
That is not. The amendment's not covered in the original spreadsheet.
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
It just is a combination of all of these things. I mean, I see a number of familiar faces in this bill here, and I'm wondering how things that we're doing with policy stuff that's been taken away from something or changed in some way, the Jake breaks and the window tinting and a whole series of others. Was it your intention to delete all of those other ones that are in this thing? How does that match up, in other words?
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair and Senator Foley, we have another amendment that's going to delete a couple things out of this bill. But if there's provisions like the window tinting issue, and some of Senator Latt's provisions, some of Senator Dibble, some of Senator Jungbauer's provisions are also traveling on their own. Unfortunately, there's a couple of those bills that are kind of hung up over in the House. We have them in here because we feel they need to become law. But we're not, with this amendment, we're not deviating too far from what the Transportation Committee did. We're just kind of cleaning up a few things.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Murphy, I was curious to see the number of items that are included in this that are going forward with a bill or have already done so.
This is like an omnibus policy bill that has some fiscal impacts.
Right.
Because you already passed your finance bill.
Yes, Senator Cohen has the finance provisions of our bill. But, Madam Chair and committee members, that's why in the Senate we have one transportation committee, because there's not too many things, as you know, Senator Foley, that you can do in transportation that isn't going to cost a little bit of money someplace. And, it's pretty tough to have a finance division and a policy division and not have them working together in transportation, because it just doesn't work very well.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Murphy, the provision on the what we call the Jake breaking appears to be the same bill that passed on the Senate floor. I know I objected to it. And at the time, MnDOT was objecting to it when we heard it in state and local government. But it looks like it's the same bill. Have they said that they're not going to object anymore?
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, they didn't object in transportation. And we've had several meetings with MnDOT officials, and the Jake breaking hasn't been an issue.
Gene Halverson's here.
And Mr. Halverson is here. Well, he just got that look of panic on his face. Maybe he doesn't want to say anything. But I think that Senator Dibble and the City of Minneapolis and the State Patrol kind of worked this out. I don't believe it's an issue.
Senator Dibble is sitting in the front row if you wanted to hear from him. Senator Dibble.
Yeah.
Jaybreak. Right. Senator Dibble.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I know Senator Roebling comments on the floor when we passed this provision. You know, MnDOT's here, so they can speak for themselves. They did come to the table and said they're not enthusiastic. I don't think they came out against this. They had some, they weren't enthusiastically supporting, but I don't think they had an actual position per se in opposition. They certainly didn't articulate some of the things that Senator Roebling articulated on the floor, setting precedent and that sort of thing. I think in general they don't like these engine braking provisions on any sort of stretch of highway. Nevertheless, communities have seen fit for themselves in various places around the state to enact small little stretches that have engine braking prohibitions because of the impact they have on quality of life for those in that area.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, has this been commonly used in that area? I drive it quite frequently, and it seems, unless they're coming full tilt and then having to exit on 94, one of those sharp turns, is that when it's being used, or what?
Senator Dibble.
Not planning ahead and slowing down, or?
Madam Chair, from what the folks in the area tell me, I don't know how commonly it's used, but it's used commonly enough to cause a pretty big disruption to their lives and their, mm-hmm. Their ability to enjoy their houses peacefully. Mm-hmm. And folks have heard the noise that engine braking puts off. It's very loud. It's staccato. It's extremely disruptive. And this is a place where the freeway just, that can't receive noise barriers because there's a hill that kind of floats up over and the neighborhood kind of perches up over the freeway in that small stretch there. And so, I would not advocate, I would advocate only proceeding in these case-by-case type of circumstances because, engine brakes are an important tool for truckers to use. Some truckers believe they're used for safety. They're sold for the purpose of saving brake wear and tear. They're an economic decision.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for that discussion about an interesting topic, J-brakes.
Madam Chair.
I heard it a lot in state and local government. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibbles, is this what we used to call downshifting?
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, no. Jake brakes are an air compression system that are placed on the engine. They absorb energy from the engine in order to help slow the engine down and slow the truck itself down. So it's it's an actual contraption that you turn on that enhances the ability of the truck to slow down. In addition to using the brakes, so it's not standard downshifting. It's an actual separate contraption makes a lot of noise.
Okay, Senator Murphy moves the A11 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had the A13 amendment as well. Madam Chair, on the A13 amendment.
Is this way it won't duplicate what we have in the budget bill?
Senator Murphy.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, on line 1.2, you see on page 4, we're deleting section 4. This was a DPS provision. They've asked that it be taken out of the bill, and that's what we're doing here. Page 48, section 67, we're taking that out of the bill as well. This was a Senator Wergen bill that would allow for medical certification of a school bus license endorsement would allow the FAA certification. Mr. Watson is telling me no.
That's not the section.
I'm sorry.
Which one are you trying to do, 65 or 67?
Is that what you intended?
That's a fine position.
Cool.
We need to get that.
Wrong section?
Which one did you want to remove?
Which one is
it?
No,
we're aiming at 66.
No. Do I hear 39?
Right there after 66.
Bonnie.
What are we looking
Which
for?
Which one is the FAA?
That's the one. Oh, that's the wrong section.
That's in flight.
So that's the deputy commissioner section.
Okay, sorry. It's in here. So my family. It's called rules.
Is it section 66?
Why are they so confused?
Are you working off the first engrossment?
Yes.
What is it? No, it's not. What is this?
Well, Madam Chair, we definitely don't want to delete section 67. Madam Chair,
Senator Murphy,
can I just make an oral amendment on line 1.3, change the section referenced to section 65?
Yes, well, you can incorporate that into
page 47, section 65.
Page 47, section 65.
The A13 amendment is changed on 1.3 to page 47, delete section 65.
Madam Chair?
Wait a minute.
Senator Roebling.
No,
madam. You're on the. Oh, okay. So you're working on.
That's not what
you're not working on the bill.
You want 66 to go to?
We were sitting in the pensions last night.
Oh, my God. This is the one that we're taking out.
Madam Chair, on that, basically what that does, it would have allowed an FAA medical certificate to be used to get your school bus endorsement. But then we found out later on that that would put us out of compliance with federal law. So we're just going to take it out.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
It does seem a little odd that you could fly an airplane with a physical under FFA rules, but you can't drive a school bus. It really does put us out of compliance because it seems to be a practical thing to do here. But if it knocks us out of compliance, I suppose we don't have much we can do about it, but we're sure of that, right?
Dan Murphy.
Chair, that's exactly what public safety said. And when we heard the bill, and this issue actually came up last year, Senator Wergen brought it to the committee, and we were kind of amazed that we thought the same way you did, you know, that, okay, you know, you're able to fly a plane but can't drive a school bus. So, but evidently there's something that is different between the two certifications and it would put us out of compliance. So.
Okay, Senator Murphy moves the A13 amendment with the incorporated change. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Are there any other amendments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Metzen.
I have the A12 amendment. Actually, it's a substitution language on the so-called Lafayette Bridge. A couple of years ago, I introduced and the legislature passed $500,000 to study a corridor out the Robert Street area through central, the west side of St. Paul, and the plans are moving right ahead, and there's designs and things already been done. But the point here is that any southern route that way has to get across the river, and this just says that when they redo the Lafayette Bridge, which I think is scheduled in 2 or 3 years from now, that they have to design it with light rail or some kind of a mass transit included in their design. So we've already passed the money or the appropriation to do the study, and this makes sure that we get a transit over the river. So that's what it does. And get it all the way, Senator Sedgham, maybe someday we'll get it down to Rochester, Minnesota. You were a co-author of my bill to get the $500,000 study. So.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've heard that there are some problems with attaching transit to the bridge itself, that it might require a separate bridge. And one of the reasons is because of height issues, and they are shortening the lights on the bridge and everything. And if light rail would go up, they have the high electrical wires. Is it because of the airport?
Let me say, Senator Roebling, you're right on. That's why we're doing this language. It took somebody 2 years to figure out that the rail on Lafayette would be too high because of the Holman Airport there. I don't know why it took till last week to figure this out, but what this does, it gives us the option of going below the bridge. It's still part of the bridge, but it's lower elevation, the way I understand it. So the footings would be not above on the height of the bridge or above the bridge. It would be down a little bit. So that's what this, I think, is accommodating. But you're absolutely correct. That's why we're changing the language this morning.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, the reason why I think that the Metzen Amendment is important here is that, you know, if we look back at Cedar Avenue and we would have actually been able to plan for transit in that corridor, we'd have a bridge that was transit ready, and now we don't. And if we want to build another bridge over there for transit, it's going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. If we use Senator Metzen's approach here, and at least design the footings so that they can accommodate transit sometime in the future, 10, 15 years from now, we'll be able to build a bridge. We won't have to go through the environmental documentation again and several other things, which would drive the price into the hundreds of millions of dollars again. So this is just allows the commissioner to plan for the eventual transit plan in that neck of the woods. Now, a lot of people say, well, why don't you use the existing? You know, if this is going to be on Robert Street, why don't you use the existing bridge? Well, that bridge was just built, and besides that, you can't get up that little hill even with a bus. You have to go over on State Street and kind of swing around. And that's why when, you know, if they're going to plan for some sort of transit way going down Robert Street, that when it comes to the the end where you have to dip down and go past Cesar Chavez Avenue, you know, you'd have to make a right and go out and swing out over the Lafayette Bridge, because they won't allow, you know, the Metropolitan Council won't allow their buses to go up or down that grade.
Senator Murphy, it's nice that you know my district so well.
We've had
described it quite well.
Senator
Pappas, Roebling,
watch out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, you know, and I agree that if we know for sure this is where the route is going to be, that this is probably an economical way to do it. But do we know for sure that this would be where the transitway route would be? Has that already been put into a master plan and decided upon?
There's, Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, I think in the we have about 8 routes preliminarily designed for that area, and now the community and the elected officials and everybody else is in the process of trying to define the best one. But whichever one it is, yes, there are designs already in place, but whichever one it is has to get across that river. And it's moving right along, and so we know it has to go across the river, and the Lafayette Bridge would be the logical.
That bridge is going to be rebuilt. So
it has to be rebuilt in about, well, I don't know, it's scheduled for 2012 or 13. It's going to be redone, knocked down and redone anyway. And much like the 35 disaster we had over there, of course, they're designing, or that's being built to accommodate mass transit also. So that's what we're doing here. You don't want to do it like Senator Murphy said. 6 years from now, once the new bridge is already built, I mean, then you're going to double, triple the cost. I mean, now's the time to do it when they're going to rebuild it, the new structure, totally rebuild. So now's the best time to do that.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Murphy.
We had some money in a previous bill to try to study that corridor, that Robert Street corridor. And, you know, all the material that's coming back indicates that if we do build a transit line, that the Lafayette Bridge is the only, you know, it's the only viable way to get across the river. We're not going to be able to afford to put it on Robert Street. It just, the cost would be.
See what I mean? You don't have to do it.
Okay, Senator Metzen moves the A12 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Are there any other amendments?
Madam Chair?
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I have the A10 amendment.
The A what?
The A10.
A10.
And this one is actually from about Rochester, so I'm not real familiar with it, but Senator Senjum is here to answer questions about it. It has to do with the Highway 52 project. Mm.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and particular thanks to Senator Roebling for offering this amendment. Senator Pappas and members, this was an insertion in last year's omnibus policy bill. It was removed in conference committee in the hopes that the City of Rochester and MnDOT would be able to come together during the course of the interim and arrive at a solution to this. And I'll back up half a step. This is a long saga, so I've got to make it real short. But in 1999, MnDOT and the City of Rochester agreed there ought to be an overpass at 65th Street over Highway 52 as you're coming into the city. That was put in 2003. The City of Rochester paid for it to be a four-lane bridge instead of a two-lane bridge, anticipating at some future date we'd have interchanges aligning with it that would allow there to be an intersection at Highway 52. Since that time, and that time is arrived, and since that time the City and MnDOT have tried to come to an agreement on getting this done. The City has spent over $600,000 trying to, if you will, prove to the MnDOT organization that this is a good idea and we ought to move forward, and it simply has continually been fraught with disappointment and the inability to move forward. And so doing this, basically, and I should add, all of this is going to be paid for by the City of Rochester, including, you know, the construction, the design, the environmental reviews, and so on. We're just simply looking for the right within the policy bill to move forward and get this done. It's something the city supports, the county supports, the citizens support, the Rochester-Olmsted County Council of Government, which is in charge of transportation planning for the greater Rochester and the county area support. It's absolutely the logical thing to do, and we just ought to get about doing it.
Mm-hmm. And, Senator Murphy, we don't usually like to add new policy to bills in the Finance Committee. How would you characterize this?
Well, Madam Chairman, this is new policy, but it's not so new that we haven't heard this issue for the last couple, 3 years. Madam Chair, this amendment will cause MnDOT a lot of heartburn, but I think it's an amendment that we need to put on the bill, just pure and simple. This, if the interchange is designed according to MnDOT standards, the safety concerns go away. But right now what we have there is we have a lack of accessibility to the highway, which limits any commercialization of some of the properties that are on both sides of the highway there that need to be developed. This is an economic tool and a safety tool. If the interchange is built according to the standards that MnDOT wants, it's not going to be a problem as far as safety. It's going to enhance the safety. And it's also going to allow the City of Rochester to expand their commercial and industrial base. And it needs to happen. I mean, we all need jobs in greater Minnesota. And even though a lot of people think Rochester is, this major metropolitan area, and I guess if you're from Hammond, it would look like a major metropolitan area. But it's greater Minnesota, in my opinion, and we need the jobs.
Any questions,
Chair?
Senator Pariseau?
Madam Chair, just actually, while it is policy, it is also only about financial responsibility, which that puts it, I think, almost partially squarely into this committee. So I think it actually fits in here quite well.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, and
look at 12 and 13.
Senator Senjum, I'm confused. Is there one interchange that this is talking about?
Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, the answer is yes.
Okay. Then
it is currently a what I would call a bridge over the highway.
Okay. Then would you please look at the last sentence of the first paragraph and the entire sentence of the second paragraph? Because it says the entire cost of the 65th Street Northwest interchange and all of that is the responsibility of Rochester. And then the next sentence says the entire cost of the 55th Street is the responsibility of the state.
Yeah.
So can you tell us kind of what's going on there?
Let me take that one or should I?
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Yeah, these are two different interchanges. There is currently one at the 55th Street Northwest. And to accommodate the one in 65th Street, there's going to need to be some upgrades done on the 55th Street. And this is part of the safety design that we were talking about. And I do believe that the city of Rochester, if they're going to spend the kind of money that it's going to take to put this interchange in, that the state should kick in their share on the 55th Street renovation to bring that up to snuff.
Okay. It just seemed a little odd.
It seems odd.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Okay. Senator Rublin moves the A-10 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, on Section 64, I think it's got something to do with a bounce check and paying for... Is a driver's license being suspended here? Is that what's happening if you pay for your...
Senator Carlson is here. That was he's out in the audience.
Madam Chair, and this is...
Senator Murphy.
This is Senator Carlson's bill, but Senator Tomasoni, basically what happens is if you pay for your vehicle taxes or fees that are, you know, under these three chapters of law that we all have to pay by... with a dishonored personal check, you know, we're going to come after you because these deputy registrars are getting hit with this, and they've got no way of recouping their costs.
Yeah, I'm sure, Senator Murphy, I'm just wondering.
Senator Tomasoni.
What happens? Is the driver's license suspended in the event of a bounce check here? Or?
Right. And, Madam Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, if you look just back a little bit, in that section, it talks in subdivision one. It says the commissioner may suspend the license of the driver.
And then does the driver have to,
Senator Tomasoni,
make all the new payments to get his license back, or is it just?
No, it's
Madam Chairman and
Senator Murphy
and Senator Tomasoni. Yes, that's my understanding. Is that it has to be paid in full?
Not after first.
No, but not the
Senator Tomasoni.
But Madam Chair. The check has to be paid in full, but then they have to pay again to get the suspended driver's license reinstated?
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chairman, I believe so. Every time your license is suspended, you have to spend, I believe it's $35 to get it back.
$265.
That's just the DWI. That's just the DWI reinstatement, Senator. Yeah, for these simple suspensions, it's normally just $35. And that's the reason why that last provision is in there about suspensions. Is because the courts are clogged with suspensions, and we just need to, if you get suspended once, that ought to be good enough, but you shouldn't be suspended and then put on suspension while you're suspended and then put on double secret suspension after that and then another one, and that's why the court system is kind of pulling
Madam Chair, just a,
Senator Tomasoni.
Just a process question here. Somebody goes in and they think they've written a good check, and for some reason it bounces. And do they get immediately notified by the department that their driver's license has been suspended? I mean, do they know that their license has been suspended when the check bounces? I mean, how does that happen? Because this ends up complicating things and down the road if you get picked up and don't know your license is suspended.
Right.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, and there is somebody here from DPS that if they wanted to comment on that, that'd be great. But my understanding is that you get a written notification that you've been suspended.
Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins, I don't want to spend.
Mr. Ohl is here from.
I don't want to spend too much
services.
Time on this since it's not a financial, a fiscal matter. If we could do it kind of quickly.
Madam Chair, my question was: is it really appropriate to suspend somebody's driver's license for a bounced check? I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's likely they're just going to keep on driving. And so, I'm not sure that this is really the appropriate response to the problem.
Then I think that should be a floor debate to, you know, remove this section from the bill. But we could clarify questions,
right,
if people have.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ohl is here, and he is the reigning expert in the states.
Can you repeat your name, please?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Larry Olala. I'm the Vehicle Services Program Director, not the Driver Services Program Director. So there is a bit of a distinction here. However, I do have some knowledge of this. This was a provision that was brought forward, I believe, by the Deputy Registrar's Association. What it's meant to do and what they said that their intent is when, because we have 173 deputy registrar agents throughout the state, and there are a number of driver's license agents. I don't have the number of that. If a bad check is written to a deputy registrar for a motor vehicle, they said it's what their intent is not to use it each and every time. But what they see as a problem is that the check is written and the vehicle's registration is issued. However, the individual maybe would sell the vehicle during that registration year. So if they don't sell the vehicle, we suspend already the vehicle's registration, so the next time the registration cycle came up, they wouldn't be able to renew their registration unless they had covered that bad check. What this will cover is if they sell that vehicle in that registration year, and now we get to the next registration year, and they still haven't made that check good, but the deputy registrar doesn't have any clout anymore because they've sold that vehicle. At that point, they would notify the department that the person still has not covered that bad check, and it's at that point that we would send out the notification. The deputy registrar would have sent the individual notices prior to notifying the department of that.
Madam Chair, maybe this is...
Is it a misdemeanor?
Who's talking? Senator Tomasoni, sorry.
Chair, can you contact the person, let them know the check was bounced, and they're about to lose their license if they don't fix the check before you suspend their license? I mean, it seems to me that would be the way to do it.
Yeah. Senator Murphy.
Senator Tomasoni, that's what happened. That was just what Mr. Ohl said, is the first contact is from the deputy registrar, and they notify you that, hey, your check bounced, and make it right within, is it 45 days? Or
They basically are setting the limits within their own areas. They act as independent agents, but it's after this point. And they said, as a matter of practice, generally this won't be until after the whole registration cycle. We don't anticipate that this provision would be used very often because most of the time they are using already the provision that suspends the vehicle's registration.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? Any other amendments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I'd like to delete Section 39. And Senator Murphy and I have never agreed on this one, and I wear my seatbelt, and I ask everybody in the state to wear their seatbelts, and I just don't think primary seatbelt law is something we need in this state. We have a law that requires people to wear their seatbelts, and the only difference between primary seatbelt law and secondary seatbelt law is you can be stopped by a police officer for not wearing your seatbelt, and I know for sure with their ticket campaigns that they can stop you for just about anything they want to stop you for. And so if they want to stop you for not wearing your seatbelt, they can probably already do it without having to have a primary seatbelt law. And I just don't think this is worth the hassle that we'll put people through. And I know we have about 88% seatbelt compliance in the state of Minnesota right now, which is very high. And I just want to remove the section. I have to ask
Madam Chair,
Mr. Watson, if Section 54 and 55 are appropriate to delete also, because I know they both refer to it.
Senator Tomasoni, before you do that, I just would like to kind of caution you that, you know, we as, you know, policy chairs prefer that the Finance Committee not alter policy that's in bills before us and that we save that for the floor. Would that be a possibility for you, is to... To save this motion for when we move to the floor? I mean, we don't have any hard and fast rule, but I was talking to someone earlier this morning about how we really don't want to muck around with policy in the Finance Committee.
Well. Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, it is a financial matter, and it's on that spreadsheet relative to it. But I'd also like to ask, don't we have a higher compliance rate than many states that have primary seatbelt laws?
Madam Chair, if you want the statistics, we can get somebody up here for the statistics, but here's what I know. The state of Minnesota is one of the few states in the country whose seatbelt compliance has dropped the past 2 years.
Well, I don't think so.
It has dropped. Yes, it has. And here's the other thing. We kill more teenagers than any other state, period. And guess what? Every one of those teenagers know that they can't get pulled over for not wearing a seatbelt. They know that. And guess what? They are disproportionately high in fatalities. Disproportionately high. I don't think that we want to send them the message that it's okay to drive around unbuckled.
Madam Chair,
okay, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, that tells me that there's something else they're doing that they should be pulled over for, because they wouldn't be killed just by virtue of not having their seatbelt on.
Madam Chair.
They would be killed because they've been driving in a fashion that leads them into an accident, and that's when they get killed.
Madam Chair, that is entirely not true. Sometimes crashes happen to young people in the car because they're not paying attention. They go through a stop sign. They get T-boned. They're driving down the road. Somebody else runs a stop sign. They get T-boned. They get killed. Bottom line is, if you're not wearing your seatbelt, your medical costs are going to be 75% higher than if you were belted up. This is it's not only a safety issue, it's a long-term health care issue, and we kill more teenagers in our state than any other state. Now, can I say that how many times? And there's also somebody here from Traffic Safety that would like to speak. Members, it's like this. If this provision comes out of the bill, there will be no more transportation bills as long as I'm chair, okay? I am dead set on passing a primary seatbelt law this year. We've went to too many funerals of our friends' kids. It's time to stop this. This is absolute madness what we're doing in our state. Now, you talk to any state patrol officer, and have any of the folks from State Patrol come up here and sit and listen to the testimony in committees, it's time to stop the discussion about primary seatbelt. It works. Every state that has it, their compliance rate has steadily went up. Ours went down last year. Members, it's time to stop the madness. So,
Chair?
Senator Berglund, I don't know if we need to take any testimony on this. I think people are familiar with the issue, so hold off for a minute. If someone has a question, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to agree with Senator Murphy that fact that we do not have as high a utilization of seatbelts as we could in this state does contribute to our health care costs. I carried this bill maybe about 10, 15 years ago, and at that time it was estimated that it would reduce the human services budget by about $3 million a year.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, it's estimated that we could save between 40 and 50 lives in our state every year if we had a primary seatbelt law. Every other state has recognized a significant improvement in their compliance rate, Senator Tomasoni, once this went on. And you can equate the number of registered drivers that you have, and you know, there's a calculation you can do, and it's kind of proven itself in other states, whether it's Washington or Oregon or wherever. So,
Senator Olson, I kind of stand corrected. This is a fiscal item, so it's appropriate for the Finance Committee. Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, I want to speak in favor of Senator Murphy's provision in here. Now, I'll tell you why. Over the last couple of years, I've had discussions with the Highway Patrol, member of the Highway Patrol, that works in schools with kids, and also with a couple superintendents that say in some districts, teenagers are actually hazed or ridiculed or teased if they are seen driving into the school parking lot with their seatbelt on. And there are some rural kids farmers, farm kids, that'll drive into the city limits with their seatbelt on, but before they get to the school, they will take the seatbelt off. I think that is absolutely atrocious.
Yeah,
anything we can do to stop that kind of behavior, I think we should do. Now, I realize in defense of kids, I realize there are some school districts, too, where there is an emphasis by the kids to be safe, to drive safe, and to use their seatbelts. But there are those places where it gets to be an in thing with teenagers to not wear the seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to stop it, as Senator Murphy said.
Since we're having quite a long discussion here, I did want to announce that some bills were put on the agenda in anticipation that fiscal notes would be ready, and we have just heard that the fiscal notes are not ready for Senator Wieger's education bill, Senate File 3001. So if anybody is here in the audience for that bill, we will not be hearing it today. Senator Higgins.
And Madam Chair, I'd just like to remind everybody that prom season is coming.
Just leave. If you're going to leave, leave quietly. Thank you.
What I said was that prom season is upon us, and it seems like every spring we hear of young people who were, you know, to or from prom and, you know, didn't want to buckle up because they didn't want to wrinkle the pretty dress or wrinkle the, you know, whatever they were wearing. And then we lose them. And so I think it's time. I've been on both sides of this issue, and I'm finally here with Senator Wieger, or Senator Murphy, sorry. It's time to do this. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Long overdue.
Senator Senator Tomasoni, are you then moving just to delete Section 39? Is that your motion?
Madam Chairman,
Senator Murphy.
The appropriate motion, not that I want to help Senator Tomasoni too much, but it would be Sections 39, 54, 55, 80, and 81. And, Madam Chairman, once again for the record, of those young drivers that died, 75% were not wearing their seatbelt.
Okay. All those in favor of Senator Tomasoni's motion say aye.
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 Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd move the bill as amended then, Madam Chair, to the Tax Committee.
Senator Murphy moves Senate File 3223 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Dibble.
Yes. Okay, thank you. We can just
Okay, Senator Dibble, Senate File 2772.
I don't know what that's all about.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni moves adoption of the division report.
To be moved.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2772 seeks to establish have the state work with local units of government for the purpose of building the infrastructure around the transitways that we anticipate going in throughout the entire metropolitan area. The nodes around those stations, we, of course, as everyone knows, passed a transportation finance bill earlier this year, and a significant portion of that bill or significant aspect of that bill is the ability to build out transitways. Transitways are great things, but transit only work well, and I have a handout, Mr. Chair, only if we're able to do the sort of development around the transit stations, kind of hearkening back to folks are familiar with the trolley lines in this area and the kind of development, jobs, retail, services, et cetera, that sprung up around those, the nodes, the intersections, where folks picked up and dropped off their transit routes. Now, admittedly, Mr. Chair, this bill doesn't, nothing much happens without money, and there, we weren't successful in gaining any consideration for bonding money for this, nor do I anticipate that we will gain any appropriation for this. Nevertheless, I think it's important that we establish the accounts, we establish the policy, and be able to create a conversation between local governments and DEED so that we can start thinking about the transitways that we do want to develop and start thinking about have local units of government start thinking about developing these transit area plans and begin that conversation with DEED to start figuring out what makes sense. So, Mr. Chair, with that, we should probably delete the appropriations section. It starts on page, I don't know what page it starts on with the committee report, but on my draft of the bill, it's section 3.
Senator DeBull, what I'm looking at is...
Mr. Chair, I think that was actually deleted in Senator Tomasoni's committee, but I don't think that made it into the report.
Subdivisions 2 and 3.
Senator DeBull, what we have is in the division, mm-hmm. there was a deletion, I believe, on page 5 of subdivision 2 and subdivision 3.
Right.
But I think subdivision 1 is still in the bill.
Right.
And that
should be taken out, Mr. Chair.
All right. So Senator Tomasoni moves the deletion of subdivision 1 on page 5.
Mr. Chair, if I could add to that, also as I look at the bill, there's a requirement that the commissioner report to the legislative committees, we might want to take that out. That's subdivision 6 in section 2. It's a reporting requirement. Might trigger some fiscal anxiety. I don't know. I haven't had a conversation with DEED about that. But nevertheless, that's something we can come back to if we do succeed at ever getting some money into this program.
All right. And then I've also realized that we should remove on page 4 the last line appropriations as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. So Senator Tomasoni moves deletion on page 4, subdivision 6, the section titled report, and then section 3, what remains of appropriations. Further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Senator Higgins. Senator DeBull.
So what remains, Mr. Chair and members, is simply an authorization for policy language that allows that at some point in the future, DEED to work with local units of government for the purpose of making loans to build the infrastructure that would support transit improvement areas, we call them. It sets forth what a transit improvement area plan must include in terms of criteria, mapping the area, the land uses that are envisioned, the anticipated demographic mix that's going to use the transit station, exactly what's envisioned for the facilities to be constructed, what the supporting public infrastructure that's needed, some findings that this is going to lead to this is going to support the transit along that corridor, et cetera. The local matching funds, the private funds that'll be a part of this plan, and the other public funds that'll come in and be a part of this effort. It clarifies what the eligible uses of those funds are: clearance, relocation, soil work, remediation of hazards, and then of course some of the public infrastructure, streetscape, et cetera. It's specifically not authorized for the transit purposes, and that needs to be very clear. This isn't to get more resources into transit facilities themselves or transit service. And Mr. Chair, I do have Bonnie Balich and from Minnesota Solutions and Dave Van Haddam from Transit for Livable Communities, who aren't here to testify necessarily, but ready to respond to questions.
All right. Thanks, Senator DeBull. Members have questions, discussion, comments?
Chairman, I'll move the bill for Senator DeBull.
Okay. If there are no... Senator Pariso.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the eligible uses of funds list here, and it strikes me that we're using the money to change the neighborhood, first of all, with public infrastructure. First of all, you got removal of hazards and all those things, and building walkways, bridges, tunnels, bikeways, parking facilities, signage could take a lot of the money away from public infrastructure to support construction. and public infrastructure to support job creation. Now, did you forget that you're going to interrupt commerce while we're doing this? And who's going to make them whole? And immediately, and after the project is finished, maybe commerce will spring up again, but I'm seeing that you could kill commerce in the meantime in the corridor, that you're doing all these other crazy things. Excuse me.
I'm not sure how to respond,
Mr.
Chair.
University Avenue moves well in two directions now. People can cross the street at any corner. They can the cars can move. You put buses on there, they can move. You put streetcars on there, what are you going to have? Interruption all the time. And that's only one corridor I can think of. And I rode the streetcars. Did you ever ride the streetcars, Senator Dibble?
No, Mr. Chair.
You're too young. I'm too young.
Yeah.
But plus, he grew up in Apple Valley, so.
And streetcars were nice, but you know, after they got through it, the streetcars, they tore up the rails and put the buses on the same routes.
You're right.
Well, Mr. Chair.
That means buses could do it, and we could do that today.
Senator Dibble.
Well, this is a larger debate about the utility and use of transit. We can have that conversation. But I think if you go to any other city in this entire country, any other city in this entire world, you'll see that the level of economic activity, vitality, mobility, the ability to build vital, thriving neighborhoods and communities that have jobs, services, education, you know, the location of worship centers is only enhanced by transit. Certainly, roads themselves present hazards and create the kind of communities that don't work for everyone. Create sprawling, drawn out, spread out communities. A lot of folks can't live in those kinds of places or make full use of them. And furthermore, you may take better advantage of existing infrastructure that we've already put in the ground. And can use it for more purposes, so you're not having to stretch out and build all kinds of new sewers and all kinds of new roads and vast acres of parking lots that only cost us a lot more money than you'd necessarily need to spend.
Mr. Watson has pointed out that we need one more amendment. On page 2, line 11, affected, the E should be an A. Otherwise, we'd be talking, I think, maybe about pompous state and regional agencies. So,
Mr. Chairman, since Senator Higgins isn't here, I'll move that.
Okay. So Senator Pappas moves that change. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, that would have been a good motion for Senator Frederickson, too.
Yes.
Senator Pappas beat him to it this time.
Such as what he's after.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion that Senate File 2772 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Dibble. I don't think this should take a long time. Let's go to Senate File 3692, Senator Jungbauer. I was just looking to see if there was a division report, which I don't believe there is. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We will make this extremely short. We're actually not anticipating any action on the bill this year. We were trying to get some amendments done, get parties together on things. But as long as you're scheduled, I thought it's important to keep this issue alive. We'll probably be moving it ahead. We have a letter from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Members, this bill deals with a relocation fund for manufactured housing, and there's been a lot of issues in terms of collecting the money, depositing the money, and making sure that all potentially affected people would put into this fund so that they could get reimbursed upon the sale and or relocation of the property beneath their manufactured housing. There's a lot of issues with the people that are in manufactured home communities, maybe mistrust with the
We had it originally collected by the owners of the communities, and people had mistrust there where they weren't giving the money in, and so we're not collecting from a very large portion of people into the relocation fund today. The bill asked that the counties would actually do this in terms of on the tax rolls, and there's a little pushback there because the counties are saying, well, there's actually a title to these homes that's at DVS, and until they actually know who the owner is, they wouldn't know who to send out the notices to. So we're trying to work with DVS to see if we can incorporate that into their new programming in terms of being able to give the counties access to who actually owns the manufactured housing. And what I have, members, is this letter from the Association of Minnesota Counties. It says, over the interim, we'll agree to work on it, try to keep this issue on the forefront, and make sure that since we created this fund, it took 5 years to get this fund actually created to bring community owners and the residents in the community together. So we don't want anybody to think we're backing away from this. We want to make sure that all potentially affected people are participants in the fund, that if they do need to be able to draw upon the relocation fund, it's there. And right now we're having a problem with in terms of education and how do we actually collect it? How do we, make sure that everybody knows the fund exists? And it's just not quite working the way we anticipated. So we do have people here to answer questions, but I guess we thought as long as you schedule it, we'd be in front of you and tell you that we're going to come back. We need to get this thing done. We need to figure out the best way to do it.
Well, Senator Jungbauer, I appreciate that. Is this something you want us to take action on then, or do you want
Mr. Chair, when we actually thought we'd have some amendments, we couldn't come to any conclusion. So as long as you schedule it, we just thought we'd tell you what was going on. I don't think there'll be any action this year.
Well, why don't – okay. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to listen to your discussion, and certainly if this is something you want to continue working on, rather than pass the bill to the floor where we're going to start having some of these major omnibus policy bills on the floor, if you don't think you're going to take action – why don't we go to the next bill? If you find that you can reach resolution over these next couple of weeks, I'd be happy to reschedule it.
And we appreciate that, Mr. Chair and members. So, like I said, as long as it was on the schedule, I wanted to make sure you knew we were working on it. We were trying to get people together. But at this point, we don't think we'll have a resolution for this year. But I wanted to inform you that we're working hard on it.
Okay, well, just let us know. Thanks,
Thank
Senator.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Senate File 2607, Senator Rest. Senator Rest, Senate File 2607.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2607 is a project that I've been working on with Representative Pawlowski in the House that sets up a framework in each of the state agencies to deal with natural disasters when they come upon us. It is... there's no appropriations in it, and I'll explain the had discussions with the PCA this morning about the possible impact on the Petro Fund, but it is no appropriations. It doesn't say how much would go to from any particular agency, but it does give them authorities and some waivers that when we would have, for example, a special session and appropriate money, the framework under which those dollars and grants and projects would be undertaken would already be in place. And the goal is to reduce the confusion that arises when we act on emergency measures. It is a project that has been worked on with the all of the state agencies and the governor's office. We do have a suggestion, and there's an amendment, I believe, an A3 amendment that is an improvement over language dealing with the Department of Human Services that they have requested as an improvement, and I would appreciate it if the committee would consider that amendment. Each of the state agencies, there's some 14 that would be involved, and it is, again, a framework for them to use in responding to natural disasters in Minnesota that qualify for after a presidential disaster declaration. You would have to put into law whatever appropriations in a special session or in a general session, for that matter. But it only comes after that federal declaration has been made. The bill specifies that the state assistance is not for disaster-related costs that are eligible for federal aid, private insurance coverage, or other reimbursement, and assigns responsibility for assisting communities to recover from a disaster to the various state agencies in their jurisdiction. And then it provides a number of waivers of rules and statutes so that when there would be emergency appropriations, they could be accomplished post-haste.
And Senator Rest, if I can ask, how would something like this dovetail, supplement, or replace what we did during the special session with the southeastern floods?
Mr. Chairman, what it would have done would have been almost be boilerplate authority that would be given, and what would the appropriations would be in accordance with the authority that the framework that is provided with this bill if it's placed in the statutes. And it is, again, there was a lot of uncertainty and doubt about who had authority to do what, under what circumstances, and in working with the state agencies, particularly, this has been a project from Representative Pawlowski, working with them in the governor's office, would take that uncertainty about the framework for response away.
Okay. Senator Rest, you've requested that the A3 amendment be adopted.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's at the request of the Department of Human Services.
Okay. Senator Olson moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Is there further discussion on that amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Senator Olson. I'd move the bill, too.
Is there further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
I would point out that fiscal note is to the is from the PCA to the Petro Fund, and not a general fund impact. And the reason for it is under the current statute, with regard 115C09(3)(i), the portion of or the commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency can make grants to rehab buildings if a portion of the cost is attributable to the petroleum tank releases, up to 50%. And what Section 13 of the bill does is to say, notwithstanding that provision, that the commissioner may make grants. So it is silent on the percentage. And what they did in their estimate on the petroleum fund is to say, well, if each one costs approximately $100,000, they have five of them a year, and they are that would mean that the possibility of the other 50% would be there. So 5 times 50 gets you 250 from the Petro Fund. What is unclear to me, and I would visit even more with them, although this is not a general fund impact, is that you have to have a federal disaster declaration in order to in order to initiate this framework. So I'm not sure. I'm going to ask them to review that a little bit more. But at any rate, it's not a general fund impact.
Okay, thank you. We have Senator Olson's motion that Senate File 2607, as amended, be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying, I'm sorry.
We need to delete a comma.
Yes.
Right.
That's my world.
Mr. Chairman, I've been reminded that on page 5, we got a problem here. I'm told we should delete a comma, but there isn't a comma there.
Can you just find any comma, or do we need the particular one?
Yeah, any comma will do.
I guess there is a comma.
You found the offending comma.
On page 5, line 15, between food and safety. After food, there's a comma. Yeah. There shouldn't
food
be.
Safety.
Food safety.
Oh, sure. Safety. Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'll move that. Being a grammar grinch.
I thought Senator Watson was doing that.
Senator Higgins moves deletion of 5.15 of the comma between food and safety. And I assume that's acceptable to Senator Rest. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Then, if we have taken care of all the periods, commas, and
I can find
articles,
sure.
We have Senator Olson's motion that Senate File 2607 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm looking around the table. I understand that we're not, Senator Vickerman, we're not quite ready. We're waiting for the fiscal note. Okay, that's not quite copied. Oh, there's Senator Pappas. Okay. Senator Pappas, Senate File 651.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, what this bill does, Senate File 651, phases out a toxic chemical that's used as a flame retardant. All of us are exposed to hundreds of chemicals every day, and the bill phases out DECA-BDE, which is a particularly problematic chemical as it widely pollutes and persists in Minnesota's environment, including the fish we eat, and accumulates in our bodies, including in breast milk. The bill focuses on preventing exposure in our homes. It's a limited ban on the use of DECA in electronic equipment and textiles and mattresses used in the home. And there are viable alternatives available to be used as other flame retardants. Other uses in transportation or wire and cable are not included. It also provides for an exemption. So if there is a company that is still producing or still phasing out DECA, they could go and apply for a waiver through the MPCA, and that's where we get the fiscal note, which is to there's a fee involved, but that would cover the waiver process. The legislation is about public health prevention. Why continue to take a chance on causing harm to developing children when safer alternatives are already available and being used? So we did, in committee, we did delay the implementation date 2 years to allow smaller companies to comply with the legislation. Leading major companies have already phased out DECA and electronics and are moving toward the phase-out in textiles. So, Mr. Chairman, it is before the committee because of this. The PCA did give us a fiscal note in the year fiscal year 11. But as I said, that would be covered by the fee. So
And this, the cost is from the environmental fund, correct? So no general fund impact.
Right.
Mayor Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering about potential cost to the consumers. Are the replacement products as cost, are they comparable in cost, and will products maybe be unavailable in Minnesota if we pass this? Are other states doing this? Are we leaders in it, or are there more, and is that why it's being phased out by the major manufacturers?
Yes, both Maine and Washington have enacted DECA bans. The EU has banned DECA now, and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters have endorsed a DECA phase-out because they feel that there are alternatives, and they're at danger when they go to put out a fire to be exposed to the chemicals when they're putting out the fire caused by DECA, so they prefer that alternatives are used. So the alternatives have been engineered, and they're in the process of being incorporated. I think I have a list of all the major companies that have already phased it out and found alternatives to use.
Penta is 5.
Mr. Chair.
Is 8.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Roebling, I've spoken with Senator Pappas about an amendment that isn't exactly ready yet, but in regards to making sure that there is a suitable alternative to DECA, and that we'll get a report back to the legislature letting us know what alternative there could be used in order to make sure that we're not taking something off the market that can't be replaced.
Mr. Chairman, we just thought that we'd do that amendment on the floor since it was more of a policy issue than a finance issue.
But the amendment calls for a report?
It calls for a report to the Senate and House committees. And I don't think we've got the exact language correct, but it's going to be regarding the potential replacements for DECA and whether or not there are any.
But it's assumed there's no cost to the report?
Mr. Chairman, we actually did the report last year by the PCA, and they came back with the recommendation that there were alternatives available. So this is just like a second look at it a year before we do the phase out to review to make sure that these alternatives are still readily available. And then to answer Senator Roebling's question, the personal computer manufacturers that have substituted DECA are Dell and HP and Toshiba and Lenovo. I've never even heard of these. I'm sorry. And the top television manufacturers that have completely substituted DECA are like Sony and Samsung and Philips and Panasonic. So the major companies have found alternative things to use for the flame retardants.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Senator Pappas, so if they don't find or don't start manufacturing without that chemical in it, does that mean they simply can't sell it in Minnesota? That's what it would mean.
Yes, that's correct, Senator Roebling.
Okay.
Let's go.
Further, Senator Pappas?
Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Our Senator Tomasoni?
So, to Senator Roebling's point, the report would be due in 2011, and then I think if the report says there is a suitable alternative, the ban would go in 2012, right?
Right.
So we'd have a year in between to actually find out if the suitable alternative is actually suitable.
Yeah, that's right.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Pappas?
And Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 651 be recommended to pass.
Okay, on the Pappas motion, is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Looks like we have a couple bills left on the agenda. We're still waiting for Senator Vickerman's fiscal note to be printed. So, Senator Anderson, Senate File 2818.
Not here. You guys are taking turns. Is Mike here?
He doesn't have to come and support it yet anymore.
Worked out.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Member. Senate File 2818, we call the Green Solutions Act, and it's related to a cap-and-trade program. I should indicate that, well, let me start by saying, by way of introduction, that we know, as most of you are aware, the governor has signed a regional agreement with between six Midwestern states, including Minnesota, and the province of Manitoba, that indicates their agreement to move forward in negotiating a regional cap-and-trade program to cap and reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the Midwest region. And this bill is an effort to have some legislative input into that process. The original bill included some principles that we wanted the legislature to adopt to guide the governor in those negotiations, because the governor will be negotiating this along with the other governors, the five other governors, and four stakeholders that were appointed by the governor. And there's really no process set up for legislative input in this very, very important discussion that's moving forward, and that would certainly come back to our state. So those principles have been removed from the bill. They were very controversial. And instead, what we have left in the bill is, I think, pretty much agreed to. I don't believe there's any opposition to the bill in its current form. So what the bill does is requires the Department of Commerce to report back, and I think the PCA to report back to the legislature on what happens in the negotiations. It appoints an advisory group of six legislators, a bipartisan group, three from the House, three from the Senate, who will be appointed to be sort of observers to that regional negotiation process in whatever form that's permitted, to be able to hopefully track the proceedings and give advice to those stakeholders as they negotiate this, although we don't have a formal role beyond what's in this legislation. There's a statement that says that any regional agreement does not take effect unless it's implemented into law by the Minnesota legislature. So it makes sure that we still have legislative oversight over any decisions that are made in the end. And then finally, it has some very comprehensive studies that we are requiring to be commissioned and paid for, and that's where the fiscal impact comes in. All of the language in here, the study language, has been negotiated in great detail, primarily by Bill Grant from the Isaac Walton League and Mike Robertson from the Chamber of Commerce. And so,
Mr. Chairman,
there's been agreement on the terms of the studies. Do you want me to finish? Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, which is the fourth engrossment or the 40808 Senatee?
Well,
Mr.
Version,
Chair, I should start by moving adoption, of the division report. Maybe I should do that
first. I was
going
to try to suggest that at
Thank
some
you.
Point. So Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed.
And
motion
Mr.
carries.
Chair, Senator Olson, the division report is the amendments made in my division, the fourth engrossment. To be engrossed with that amendment to be complete. This is the
Senator Anderson, you're working off the engrossment.
We're working off the fourth engrossment and the amendment. We don't have a fifth engrossment.
We do.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, the amendment is not engrossed.
We do have a committee engrossment. We do have a committee engrossment. Sorry.
Okay, I didn't find that.
Because we had this 4808 Senatee. I don't know what that is, if that was before the engrossment.
Members, I think you're looking for, in the packet there are a couple of bills, you're looking for what's titled at the top, committee engrossment.
It says SS-2818-CE.
Yes, that's the
committee
engrossment.
Sorry, I hadn't seen that.
And the division reports to the committee engrossment. Is that correct, Senator Anderson?
No.
It's included in it. It said.
Includes it. So the 2818-CE should have all the amendments engrossed.
So if
thank you for asking.
So if members want to see what the division did, we have the division report in front of us, titled Division Report, obviously, to the committee engrossment. And you've been working from the committee engrossment.
Yes.
Which is the entirety of what you want to do.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of giving you a general framework of the bill anyway, but as you can see, most of the amendments that were made, I think all the amendments that were made in my division relate to the you know, just technical changes to how the study is set up and what it's called, and which it's divided into three parts, four parts. So I just, that's what the amendments relate to.
It is in gross.
So, Mr. Chair, can I just, very briefly, yes, let me just finish and say that. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, before she finishes. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
So the 28, the CE, the Committee on Engrossment, is that after this amendment?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's the final version that you should be looking at.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Yes. Thank you. So on the CE, Committee Engrossment, you will see that the potential cap and trade revenue study, there will be a study of the costs and benefits, an economic analysis of a regional cap and trade, what the economic, environmental, and public health costs and benefits of such a program would bring to us as a state. There's also a study of the revenue potential for if you do charge carbon emitters to have an allowance to emit, what would that look like and how would that revenue be used potentially if that was part of an agreement? So the expenditures would be studied. And then there's also a governance study that would that we're asking the, at this point we're having Commerce ask the University of Minnesota to do that. We may just change that and have legislative staff do that study. But in any case, that would be a study of how an agreement and revenues related to that agreement would be implemented, how that would be governed. So the substantive studies relating to costs and benefits would be paid for by giving an appropriation to Commerce, which would go to the Midwest Governors Association. So the Midwest Governors Association is running this whole negotiation among the six states, and they are using expert consultants as they process that the work of that those six governors, and we just are going to feed into that process and ask those consultants with our appropriation to do a Minnesota-specific study as well on what the cost and benefits would be specifically to our state. And the appropriation that's in here, it was, some of you may remember when it went through some other committees, it was an assessment. We've changed that, and what we're doing is taking money from last year's appropriation, $500,000 from a much larger appropriation that was made to the Commerce Department to do grants for renewable energy research. And we're doing this with the cooperation of the Department of Commerce.
Okay. And Senator Anderson, let me just ask a couple of questions. This is, as you've indicated, a multi-state effort. Senator Anderson, I'm wondering, this is a multi-state effort. The appropriation from the Special Revenue Fund in Section 5, what I'm a little bit confused about is if this is done in conjunction with other states, are they all appropriating a similar amount of money?
No, Mr. Chair, as far as I know, we're the only state that's doing any kind of a process like this. Simply because I believe it's critically important for the legislature to have a voice in this process and to participate in this process. And what we found in our discussions of this bill as we went through, I don't know, five different committees, was that there was a lot of uncertainty about what a cap and trade would look like and how it would affect our state. So we are really trying to grapple with this at the front end. I don't know that any other states are doing that. They should do that, but I'm not aware of any of them doing that. So they're basically, the other states are just leaving this up to their governors to sit down and hammer out something, and, you know, the legislatures, as far as I know, are not involved. Although I am in contact with other legislators in this region to try and encourage them to participate and observe the process as well.
And I tend to get caught up in the general fund. Obviously, this is not appropriate from the general fund, but $500,000 seems like quite a bit for an economic impact study. How did you arrive at that figure?
Well, there's actually three different studies, so it's pretty detailed economic modeling that will be needed to be done. maybe Mr. Grant could help on that. I know Mr. Robertson and Mr. Grant, as I said, negotiated this agreement, and they agree that that's the amount that will be needed. Anything you wanted to add?
And Mr. Chairman, Bill Grant for the Isaac Walton League, and we have been working on this for some time. It is anticipated that the two studies, the one economic impact study and then the uses of any potential revenue, are both about a $250,000 cost to the consultants that are doing the work for the Midwestern Governors Association to bring Minnesota-specific analysis to the work that they're already doing at the regional level.
Mr. Chairman?
This is not from general fund dollars. I should clarify that it was a renewable development fund appropriation made last year to the Department of Commerce.
And I made that clear a minute ago, that it's not general fund. Mr. Grant, you indicated that there were two studies. The language in the bill references up to $500,000 for the economic impact study. So is it supposed to reference two separate studies?
Mr. Chair, if you read the sentence, it says up to $500,000 on 5.9. Up to $500,000 is for the economic impact study.
The revenue study.
Study and the governance study. It's a long sentence.
Okay.
And we may be able to delete the governance study section. We wanted to
up on the third floor,
work with staff and see if we think that's within the capacity of our legislative staff to do over the interim.
This is a general comment. It's not directed toward your bill, although I see all these appropriations, irrespective of fund that we get for various studies, and at times I think I'm in the wrong business. I need to be a consultant putting these studies together. You do about five of them in 1 year, and you'd be doing pretty well. But increasingly I'm concerned when we start throwing around the amounts. Again, this isn't directed toward this particular effort, Senator Anderson, because it sounds like you've been a little bit careful about the cost of the study. But, Senator Pappas, I don't mean to finger point at yourself, but I know in your bill we directed the university to do the that health modeling study at $500,000. And I'm not sure that we've already done a careful analysis. I can't recall during the time I've served on this committee. Maybe Senator Fredrickson could help me. Why don't we've ever done any kind of careful analysis as to exactly what these studies cost? And we come up with these very broad figures of, well, this one's going to be $250,000, and this one's going to be $500,000, and this one's going to be $50,000. And I'm not quite sure how we've arrived at these costs. And that's a general comment. Sir Anderson, in this instance, was struck by the figure of $500,000. And I don't have a good answer for that. And I'm not necessarily going to suggest we hold up Senator Anderson's bill, which he's worked very hard on, for something that we've done time and time again with previous legislation in this committee, but possibly, I don't know, Mr. Mossman, maybe it's an interim project. We could try to figure out, irrespective of the fund, because it's all dollars from somewhere that may or may not be used for other purposes, whether or not the cost of these funds is something we're just a little bit careless about. Senator Fredrickson?
Mr. Chairman, the commissions I've served on is the LCMR, now LCCMR, and we fund research projects there, and typically we will have a breakdown of how that money is going to be spent. If it's, this is an example, $250,000, it'll say how much time a tenured professor is going to be working on the project, what's that's going to cost, how much a research assistant is going to be working on it, what that'll be cost, and equipment that they need to that they will be using, and how long it's going to take. You know, there's more of a detailed breakdown. Maybe we should be looking at something like that to see who's going to be doing the research, what their qualifications are, what it's going to cost.
What would be in a fiscal note?
What it's going to cost.
Or possibly when we look at a fiscal note, as opposed to just particularly where it's coming from a non-general fund source, we should have a sub-fiscal note along the lines of what you suggest. Maybe in terms of what the LCCMR is doing now, or what we have done occasionally in other instances, but I am as I've looked at some of these studies this year, I just have started to wonder that. Senator Olson, you?
No.
Senator Barroso?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look at this proposal. I mean, it was introduced, I believe, by Senator Anderson as reacting to something that the governor is putting a group together to study. And so I'm trying to figure out how, if we were not invited to be part of that study, why we are inserting ourselves into it or into the same business that they're going to be studying. It seems to me that if the governor has, with other governors in the region or not, is putting together a group for it, I don't know why we'd want to insert ourselves and try to find some place to find the money to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
What the governors are doing is not a study. What the governors are doing is negotiating a rule, and then that's by next November. They'll be negotiating a model rule to be adopted in all six states, and then they're negotiating an agreement, a cap-and-trade program, which is a fundamental restructuring of our whole economy. And it's a very significant undertaking that the governors have agreed to do that will affect every aspect of our economy and our energy usage in this state. And I think we would be really derelict as legislators if we didn't involve ourselves in that discussion from the very beginning. And certainly at the end, if you know, if they do reach agreement, as they've pledged to do, they've signed an agreement saying this will happen, there will be a regional cap-and-trade agreement made, the legislature will certainly, and it makes it clear in here, the legislature will have to pass legislation to enact that into law before it would take effect, because it is so significant, and it will affect every one of our constituents, and it'll affect the price of energy and affect our future as a state, as a and as a planet. It's incredibly significant. And again, we were elected to grapple with these very difficult decisions and to participate in them. And you know, we live in a government that includes checks and balances, and those balances include the role of legislators. I mean, we could all just go home, but we wouldn't be doing our jobs then.
Further questions or discussion? Senator Stumpf.
This is probably policy and not finance, but it could be both. The study criteria on subdivision 4, number 3, where we talk about those sectors, and I'm not sure what is meant by sectors, but that do not participate in the cap and trade program. I mean, is China a sector or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, where are you?
Page 4. Line
4.18.
4.18. Number 3.
Oh, I see. Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, a cap and trade program, you know, the northeastern states have already started to implement one. The western governors have already agreed to implement one. And what they would include is a cap on how much greenhouse gases can be emitted in that state or in that region. So a Midwest regional greenhouse gas emissions agreement, which the governors have agreed to do, would limit how much carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases can be emitted in those in these states. And the question, one of the questions to be asked is which sectors that emit, which parts of the economy that emit carbon dioxide would be covered by that rule? In other words, would it just be the electric utilities? Would it be the transportation sector, including the use of gasoline? And petroleum products? Would it include industrial emitters? Would it include agriculture? Or would it include forestry? Or would it include the construction of buildings? All of those pieces need to be decided, and there has to be a decision made whether emissions coming from each of those sectors are capped or whether they're not covered by a cap. And so that's kind of one of the fundamental design questions you have in a cap and trade program is who's covered.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, this does not pertain to those states that do not participate in the cap and trade, but it pertains to the When you say sectors, you're actually meaning industries or individuals.
Okay. That's right, Mr. Chair, Senator Stein. And, of course, Mr. Chair, eventually I think it's inevitable, and I think most people agree it's inevitable there will be a national cap and trade in the United States. All three of the presidential candidates support that and have said that they strongly intend to make that happen when they are elected president. And so eventually there will be a national program. We, because the governors have really pushed to lead the way in the Midwest, we expect that we may do it first in the Midwestern states, like the Northeastern states and the Western states are doing. And we're hopeful that by really shaping what it looks like, we can have a program that is the most beneficial to our region, our economy, our environment, and our needs as a state and as a Midwestern region.
Cheryl. Sarah Metzen.
Yeah, this too is it's not a major thing, but the policy issue. The majority leader appoints the members for as long as I've been around here. It's been the Committee on Committees, and this is about the third or fourth time I've seen this, and I don't know why we're changing the way that these people are appointed. It's been forever the Committee on Committees, and now majority, it pops up once in a while, and I'm not so sure why we're doing this and who's doing it.
Mr. Chair.
I thought we took this out a while back.
That was in my other bill.
Yes, we did take this out of something and substituted it. Now what, this thing is sneaking up on us or something?
No, Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, I have another bill that has an advisory group, and every other bill in the legislature that has an advisory group appointed of legislators has to go through Senator Rest Committee, and in every case, Senator Rest Committee puts it in this form. And so that was the doing of the State and Local Government Committee. And obviously, as senators, we take our bills through all these committees, and committees have their way with our bills. And I think I probably started it in the form that you talked about, as I did in my other task force bill. This is Senator Rest's preference for how we do things, and I can't remember which committee changed. I have another bill with a task force that changed it back. It was probably this committee that did that. I don't care.
Mr. Chair, to that point,
do whatever you want.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I care. I do care, and I think we're going down the wrong road here, and this is the last shot I get at it other than the floor, so I'm –
Mr. Chair?
Sarah Olson.
When it's got legislators on it, doesn't it have to go to the Rules Committee?
That's correct.
And that's where the Rules Committee will probably change that.
Is that my second bite of the apple?
Yeah.
I won't take a bite today.
I can't remember.
Pretty good apple, though. All right, I'll lay up. But this isn't... And I don't know Senator Rest.
Maybe went to the Rules Committee, or maybe that was my other bill.
Your other bill.
No.
I'm losing track. It's been so many bills.
I don't believe this bill has been in the Rules Committee,
okay.
Senator Anderson.
It hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Further discussion on Senate File 2818.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, on the fiscal note where it says the bill description, it says the bill establishes a cap and trade program. Does this establish a cap-and-trade program, or is this a study to see what a cap-and-trade program would do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, it says it establishes principles of a cap-and-trade program, and those have been deleted from the bill.
I don't see the word.
They're just going off the old.
Well,
I'm looking at the top of page
the title hasn't been
three
changed.
Of the fiscal note, where it says
I'm
bill
on
description.
I'm on the top of page five.
Right, page five.
The bill?
It does say that, doesn't it? Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know.
Hey, Senator Anderson.
I didn't write that.
So is that inaccurate?
Page five?
It certainly does not establish a cap-and-trade program.
Okay.
No, it does not. So I guess that is inaccurate. That will come later.
All right. Is there further discussion on Senate File 2818?
Chairman
Pariseau,
if the title is incorrect and the language of the bill probably follows the title, I'm not certain about that because I'm not an expert. That kind of
amend the title.
what would we act upon? Which piece of the bill do we act upon?
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think the title that the one that's in, I mean, there's a title called Green Solutions Act that's part of the text of the bill, but the title at the very top, I don't think that has any impact, legal impact at all. That doesn't show up in the statute books. So, I mean, council can answer that, but I don't think that title, I think that's sort of an administrative thing that we use in the legislature as we put bills through. I don't think it has any real legal meaning, but I could be wrong.
Further questions on the bill? Mr. Watson, you.
Mr. Chairman, I thought Senator Tomasoni was merely referring to some language in the fiscal note. The title of the bill itself says Establishing Principles of a Cap and Trade Program. I think the bill is.
Which have been deleted.
The bill is perfectly fine. I think there might be a problem with the fiscal note. But as long as I'm talking, on page 4, line 12.
Continue, Mr. Watson.
I think that reference to subdivision 3 should be to subdivision 2.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Page 4, line 12, subdivision 3. I think you mean subdivision 2.
It may have been in the amendment. I'm not sure.
I think it was an amendment that wasn't made that should have been.
Establishing the principles.
So that's the change.
Senator Anderson, do you want to make that motion?
Is that right?
Don't argue with him.
I should say subdivision 2.
Yes, that's right.
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Anderson moves the language suggested by Mr. Watson as long as he was talking. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion carries.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Just to be clear, so this bill establishes principles for a cap-and-trade program. The study will come back and tell us whether or not we should have a cap-and-trade program. And if the study comes back and says we should have a cap-and-trade program, does this bill then do what we need to do?
Mr.
Do you have
Chair,
a cap-and-trade program? Is that what's going on here exactly?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, this bill, the study doesn't tell us whether we should have one or not. That's really going to be our decision and the governor's decision. You know, I assume the governor will make some recommendations to us. I mean, that's what they've agreed to do is to, and we're requiring them to make some recommendations to us. But nothing, this bill doesn't make anything, a cap-and-trade happen. We would have to do that later. In fact, if you look at the language, it says, and I wanted to be really clear about this, on page 2, line 18, any cap-and-trade agreements entered into, that is, by the governors, are not effective in Minnesota until enacted into law. And so we will have information after these studies are done that will help us decide what we should do. And in the meantime, the governors are... I mean, the reason I wanted us to act this year is because the governors are going to go ahead and put this agreement together, and we're not going to have input into it, except for this group of legislators who might follow them around and watch them. But, and are you volunteering, Mr. Chair? So, you know, the governor will come back to us and say, here's what we've agreed to as governors. But we still, as a legislature, have to decide if we want to do what they've agreed to, or if we want to do nothing, or if we want to change what they've agreed to. That's all up to us.
Okay, move the bill. Okay.
And that won't happen this, Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, that will not happen this session.
Mr. Chairman.
So you can vote Chair for Stump. This without any fear.
Just a question about, you know, when you talk about... the complexity of this study and the time involved, and it's going to you're going to request this back within about 10 months, maybe
February, I think.
9 months. Mm-hmm. Is that reasonable to think that somebody's going to gear up by the time this is? It seems like there's an awful lot of criteria in here, and unless the study's already cooked. Already done.
Well, Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I know it's not already done because we need this information and we don't have it. And I wish we had ordered it last year because, as I said, the governors are going ahead without this study. So we're going to have governor's staff and four people from Minnesota deciding all this stuff without having this information. And I'm a little concerned about that, even though they're great people. Mr. Grant's one of them. Mr. Robertson's one of them. I'm sure they'll do a good job. But it's such an important issue that we need this information. We know that the consultants that are working with the Midwest Governors Association, we've talked with them. We know they say they can get this done by next year. But as I said, the governors are moving ahead. They're going to come back with a model rule next fall. That's their timeline. And so they're moving ahead very quickly, and so we need this information to be available to us by next session.
Okay. Further discussion on the bill? Otherwise, Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 2018 as amended be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Did you send it to rules?
Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry,
it'll have to go to rules.
And yeah. Yes, and it would be re-referred to the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, we have two more bills left. One non-committee member is here, Senator Latz, Senate File 2795.
Get your coffee. Now.
Chairman, I move adoption of the division report.
Okay. We have Senator Berglund's motion to adopt the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Staying within the property law area, but moving from a law and economics seminar on cap and trade to the real property section of the State Bar Association, what you have before you is some proposals relating to transfer on death of real property. It came to the Finance Committee and the Senator Berglund's division because originally there was a fiscal note with a tail of $157,000 in the year 2011 related to some ambiguity in the language and the concerns about MA ability to recover some expenditures. Since that time, we had an amendment in Senator Berglund's division, which Department of Human Services made clear resulted in a zero fiscal note. I believe you are being handed right now an updated fiscal note, which shows no fiscal impact whatsoever from this. So I ask for your support.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
I'll move the bill for Senator Latz.
Just trying to glance at this. The members have questions?
Chairman.
Senator Pariseau.
Chairman, is this intended, Senator Latz, to expedite paperwork at the point of death of a spouse or something like someone in the family, to expedite the work having to be done through the county or any other entity?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pariseau, I do have an expert with me if you have any details, but the main component of the bill is to provide for a new mechanism for the transfer of property upon death, is to enable a family to do to set up a transfer process without going through some of the more elaborate trust mechanisms, and so that it actually makes it cleaner and it reduces the amount of paperwork that would be necessary.
And Senator Latz, did this come through either the real property section or the probate section?
This is through the real property section of the Minnesota State Bar Association initiated this. We had testimony in the past from Julian Zweber from the elder law section of the Bar Association as well, and he's available if there are any detailed questions about the bill.
Yeah, see him behind you. Do members have questions for Senator Latz? Senator Foley.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure whether this went to judiciary or not. Could you give me information on that?
Senator Latz?
Yes, it did, Mr. Chair.
Senator Latz, it went from what, judiciary to finance? Is that correct?
I believe that's right. There were no other stops.
All right. Further discussion on the bill? Does anybody wish to move the bill?
I did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize, Senator Berglund. Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 2795 be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lyons. Okay, then we have Senator Vickerman, Senate File 3683. But do we have a fiscal note at this point?
Mr. Chair and members, what we have is we have a preliminary fiscal note on the entire bill, and then we have pieced with that two separate fiscal notes pertaining to provisions with the Department of Agriculture. They're part of the consolidated fiscal note is not completed yet, but Mr. Mueller has, and then we'll be passed out the fiscal note provisions for those parts of the bill. So it'll be a little bit piecemeal, but we'll have all the information before us.
Okay. And, Senator Vickerman, this is your omnibus policy bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. Senator Vickerman.
Chairman, members of the committee, it's a division report. It has to be adopted, does it, or?
Okay. There's a division report. All right. Senator Vickerman moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. And that actually, members, is attached as the bill itself to the bill summary. Senator Vickerman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll briefly go through the policy part of it. Section 1 is a livestock expansion grant, and that's from Senator Scogin. Section 2 is prohibited pesticide use. That was Senate Files 2449 by Senator Sieben. Section 3 is ammonia tanks. That was carried by Senator Kubley. Section 4 is an agricultural permit for license ratification and suspension. I carried that bill. Agriculture chemical response and reimbursement account was from Senator Lurie. Section 6, food law change with Senator Lurie, Senator Deal. Section 15 is control of bovine tuberculosis, Senator Scoy. Section 16 and 51 is the next gen board. I carried that bill, Mr. Chair. Section 17, Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Content Extension. I carried that myself. The second one, Section 18 through 25, is animal chiropractics, and that's from Senator carried by Senator Kubley. Section 26 to 40 is Board of Veterans Medicine from Senator Dill. Section 41, 42, 53, and 54 is a biodiesel content mandate from a bill that I carried. Sections 43 to 49 and 52 is open space preservation from Senator Dill. And Section 50 is agricultural best management practice loans is from Senate File 3683, the one that I carried. Second part of the bill is article is 2 is Veterans and Military Affairs. Section 1 to 3 is motorcycle plates for veterans. I carried that bill, Mr. Chair. Also, World War II Memorial Donation Match Account is from a bill that I carried. And Section 5 to 7, Veterans Health Care Advisory Council is from Senator Erickson Robes. Section 6 is State Veterinary Cemeteries from Senator Petro Solon. Section A is World War II Service Medallion and offered by Senator Kubley. And the plaque authorization, Section 9, was authored by Torres Ray. Mr. Chair, there's a couple of things in the bill that I need to put an amendment on. And the first one, Mr. Chair, what I would like to offer the A8 amendment.
Okay. We have the A amendment, which is being distributed. So. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, does everybody have the 8-8?
Okay, I think it's now been distributed to Senator Vickerman. What, if you could indicate what the amendment is. Senator Vickerman?
Well, Mr. Chair, then this amendment to the biodiesel section of the bill is in order to reflect changes to the standalone bill, Senate File 2427, that were adopted and passed yesterday by the Environment and Energy Budget Division. Amendment is to Article 1, Section 41 of the bill. This amendment reflects the work of many stakeholders, including Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota Farmers Union, the Corn Growers Association, the Minnesota Trucking Association, Flint Hills, Isaac Walton League, and Institute of Agriculture and Trade. The section of this of the amendment that has a fiscal implication is the use of $500,000 from the 2007 Next Gen Energy Appropriation to the Department of Agriculture for infrastructure grants to fuel terminals that serve Minnesota for cold weather biodiesel blending, and $500,000 from the 2007 Next Gen Appropriation to the Department of Commerce for the algae to biofuel research project at University of Minnesota. And members, just a lot of hours and a lot of time went into trying to get this everybody to agree on this part of the bill. And so full agreement with everybody, with the names that I listed. So I would move the adoption. If there's any questions, I have a fiscal expert here that could help me do that, or I can ask Gwen Cheney from the agriculture if she'd like to. She's not here. We'll come forward.
Yeah, well, Mr. Mueller, maybe I could ask, how does this amendment comport with the fiscal note? And I'm trying to match this up in the bill. On page 43, where you have, there's the unencumbered balance and is available.
Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note does not reflect the amendment yet. This amendment is adding some new language, taking money out of existing appropriations. One, the first one is existing general fund appropriation that we made in last year's ag bill for renewable development grants to the Department of Ag. So this would sort of allocate $500,000 of that appropriation. The Section 57 in the amendment does that. And, yes, there is other language in the bill allowing that money to the Department of Ag carry forward from the first year to the second. That was more of a technical change in the bill. So we are sort of amending that last year's appropriation twice, one by allowing the money to be spent the second year, and then the second would be the amendment from Senator Vickerman here allocating $500,000 of that $3 million appropriation out for a specific purpose. The other appropriation in the amendment actually is is sort of an allocation out of existing money that has been appropriated to the Department of Commerce from the Renewable Development Fund. They have a pot of money available or to make grants, and this would basically specify a certain grant out of that pot of money in Commerce.
That's a popular fund. We just dealt with that with Senator Anderson's bill.
Mr. Chairman, yes, there's a couple different pots of money over at Commerce that use renewable development funds that this year we are allocating specific projects within those pots. This is another example of that.
So how large is the total fund?
Mr. Chairman, members, there are a couple different pots over in Commerce. The one that this bill addresses and Senator Anderson's previous bill, I think, was a $2 million pot. So between this bill and Senator Anderson's bill, half of that is now allocated. But it was $2 million per year. So they have fiscal year 08 money that was already spent, and now we're basically specifying how some of the 09 money is to be spent.
And where's the fund from?
It is renewable development money that is collected from Xcel Energy, and then part of it gets spent by the state, and Xcel Energy still spends part of it. But last year we did a number of appropriations out of that fund within Commerce for various projects.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, in light of our prior discussion, have you given any consideration on those livestock expansion grants of putting some warning that they may become subject to cap and trade given the high production of CO2 or greenhouse gases from livestock flatulence?
Okay, I don't think you have to answer that.
There better be warned because we don't know what's coming.
Well, Mr. Mueller, let me ask you. It's not on the amendment, but as I look at the amendment, I'm trying to figure out how that matches up to where we might be, at least relative to the language that's on 43. And just relative to the bill itself before we get to the amendment, there are a couple of sections, Section 1, Section 15, that match up to language that we have in the finance bill. But do we carry in this bill the appropriations? How do we do that?
Mr. Chairman, members, there are a couple of items, specifically the livestock expansion grants. We're just carrying the language of the program in this bill. The appropriation is in your budget bill.
Right.
So we're just doubling up a little bit on the language here to make sure it's carried. The other one is the bovine tuberculosis. That's actually, again, just the language of the program is in this bill, but no money for it. The appropriation, again, is in your bill and actually also Senator Scoy's bill. So the appropriation for that purpose is in two different bills.
But when we passed Senator Scoy's bill out of the committee, we had the appropriation.
Right.
So if this bill doesn't have the appropriations for those sections, how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, it's just another place where they're carrying some of the program language to make sure it gets included somewhere.
Sure. Sure it gets included somewhere?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, without the appropriation, the language can stand alone. It's just there's a program that would not get any money. But it was decided when this bill came out of the budget division to include the bovine TB language also in this bill.
And obviously, Senator Scoy's bill, the bovine tuberculosis bill, is moving separately with the appropriation. Is the other bill, the livestock, this first section, is that moving separately?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's all. The only other place the livestock language and appropriation are moving are in the omnibus budget bill.
Okay.
Chairman.
Senator Mitzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this, using $500,000 of the renewable development fund money, and I piggyback a little bit on Senator Bowen's remarks. I think Senator Anderson's bill, how much did she take out of that fund and what's left in that fund, and why does the biofuels, how does the Metropolitan Council get involved in this area? What are they?
Senator Vickerman or Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, I'll talk at least to the appropriation. Yes, between this proposal here on this amendment and Senator Anderson's previous bill, the two of them together, it was $500,000 for this bill out of the RDF and $500,000 out of the Senator Anderson's bill. And
so it's $1 million, Mr. Chairman, so far this morning?
Out of the RDF. That still leaves another $1 million that Commerce has out of a pot of money from the RDF.
Mr. Chairman?
But that's whacking away at that fund. I mean, there's other reasons for that fund, but things, but
I think I can answer the Metro Council one.
The Metro Council, yes.
Okay, please. Sir Olson.
Mr. Chairman, because that algae to fuel, the algae grows on the ponds at the sewage treatment facilities, and Met Council operates a number of those. I'm not sure. I think they'd have to study it because whether this climate is such that it can be as efficient a production as it is in warmer climates is still, I think, open to question. But if it could happen, it would be terrific.
Okay.
Because it's a higher percentage of fuel output than our other forms of transfer of bio materials into fuel.
And I understand. Thank you very much. But sometimes you think that the University of Minnesota and the Metro Councils, maybe they could find some money too, you know. But every time they need something, they come to us running and to do this study, to do that study, or we need three more people to do this. We already have 1,900 people on our staff. And it just seems to me once in a while you can take it out of your hide and not always have to. I agree with the program, and it's especially after you
Mr. Chairman, I thought the university was already doing work on it, and I don't know if this is more or if
well, we're giving them some more money to help.
Mr. Mossman, do you want to offer
Mr. Chairman, members, just to clarify, both the language in both the Senator Anderson's bill that you heard earlier and this bill refers to laws of 2007 appropriations from the Renewable Developments Fund. So in the laws you passed last year, there was $2.25 million appropriated in fiscal 08 and $2 million appropriated in fiscal 09 from the Renewable Developments Fund for competitive cost share grants to do research in Minnesota. So the money has already been appropriated from the Renewable Developments Fund. The previous bill and then this bill then earmarks, if you will, part of that appropriation. It's not taking additional money from the fund.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that.
Chairman Minson.
How far can you go on that fund, No, I understand the money's in the fund, but the ratepayers have paid for that. All of us here, most of us here, through the XLPs, have paid for that. So it's all our money, like Senator Cohen mentioned earlier.
Okay, well, we do have the A8 amendment in front of us. I don't know, Senator Vickerman, if you've moved that yet. Do members have any further discussion on the A8 amendment? If not, all is in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, then I have the A7 amendment. It has to do with veterans issues. And there is a handout.
And Senator Vickerman, with apologies, we're going to have to adjourn at 11 o'clock, and so I'm not sure we'll finish the bill or not. We'll try to get through it. Otherwise, we'll schedule it at the beginning of our next agenda. Senator Vickerman, the A7 amendment?
Mr. Chair, then, the A7 amendment is primarily technical. It simplifies and enacts a codification of the statute to reflect reorganization order number 194 issued by the Department of Administration. And that order abolishes the Minnesota Veterans Home Board and transfers their functions and responsibility to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The Agriculture and Veterans Policy Division addressed this issue when we passed Senate File 3832. It was offered by Senator Ropes. And the bill is on general orders. However, the House Companion hasn't met deadline because they amended it into their ominous policy bill. And I would like to insert the Senate position from Senate File 3282 into our ominous bill. And, Mr. Chair, that's what the amendment does. And I have a witness here if you need any more.
And so, Senator Vickerman.
In simple terms, Mr. Chair, they abolished the one board. Now we have it's all comes under the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and we have to do that.
Okay, and where else are you carrying this language?
it's on the floor, the stand up.
Okay. And so you, the, And you're the author of that bill as well, is that? Or Senator Erickson Robes is?
Senator Erickson Robes is also the bill, Mr. Chair.
All right, do members have questions on the A7 amendment? Okay, if not, Senator Vickerman moves adoption of the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Now, Mr. Chair, I have one more amendment. Is it passed out? I'll explain it as they're kind of passing it out because I know it just transfers the funds in the Veterans Cemetery Trust account. And all money in the Veterans Cemetery Trust account in the Special Reserve Revenue Fund established in Minnesota Statute Section 197-236, Subdivision 7, must be transferred to the Permanent Development Maintenance Account in the Special Revenue Fund under the Minnesota Statute Section 197.236, Subdivision 6. And it's... Christian Keeler, if you would just say a few brief words. I know it's time we need to move on.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Christine Keel, Department of Veterans Affairs. In this omnibus policy bill, we changed the statute to allow us to have another cemetery, state veteran cemetery built. So we're changing the language from cemetery to cemeteries. And in that, we delete our permanent trust account because back in 1994 when the legislature established the permanent trust account, it was done with the intent that the cemetery would run off donations to that account. We have not realized donations to that account, so we are asking for it to be deleted.
Okay, and Senator Vickerman, I'm just a little bit concerned. We just got this preliminary fiscal note, and now we have amendments that have some fiscal impact. This sounds simple enough, but it'd be nice if it was reflected in the fiscal note. And how much is in the fund?
Mr. Chair, there's $1,900 in there, which was an appropriation. $1,000 of it was an appropriation from the legislature back in 1995. And the other $998 is the interest accumulated from that account from what we have been able to track.
All right. Senator Vickerman moves adoption of the A6 amendment. There's no further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Okay, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, I have no further amendments. There may be some from somebody else, but
Mr. Chairman. Chairman.
Senator Dill. Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, I just found out on page 20 of the bill, we need 20.6, where it says not more than 201 herds, we have to change that to 300 herds.
That's what passed the Senate in the budget bill. That's the same number.
That's what's in the budget bill. It's just a change. 201 to 301.
300.
301. And that's on page.
Matches up with the budget bill.
Which?
Matches up with the budget bill then.
Mr. Chairman, it's page 20, line 6, strike 201 and insert 300.
Okay. Senator Vickerman makes that motion. Page 20, line 20.6. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A5 amendment.
Senator Vickerman, as this is being distributed, Mr. Mossman and I have been talking about some other concerns, just to make sure this this matches up. And, Mr. Mueller, I'm not sure you've had a chance to talk to Mr. Mossman about some of these concerns. They aren't big concerns, but we want to make sure we're doing this properly. And I know that apparently there aren't a lot of people who've talked to me. I know that this issue, Senator Dill, is of some contentiousness. We have probably about 120 seconds to talk about it. So, you know, as I mentioned, if we don't finish this, Senator Vickerman will have this bill on the agenda. I'm not sure. Do we meet tomorrow? Or when's our next meeting?
Probably Monday, but we're trying to line up the house. So.
Okay. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, this is making a modification to the section that deals with chiropractors and their practice of veterinary medicine, and it's putting the bill in the same order that it would be for most of the states that allow chiropractors to practice on animals by inserting the requirement that a veterinarian refer the animal to the chiropractor. And the only state in the union that does not have direct access to chiropractors is Oklahoma, and even that state has some requirements that if there's sedation required and x-rays and so forth, the veterinarian must do that. So at any rate, it's as a veterinarian myself, there's a lot of diseases and a lot of things that go wrong with animals other than what can be corrected through chiropractic care, and there are 30 veterinarians in the state right now that are veterinary chiropractors, so the need to expand the practice to chiropractors in the first place is, in my mind, questionable. But if we're going to do it, we should have the veterinarian in the mix so that he directly refers the animal and to the chiropractor if it's required, because there's a lot of other problems with the musculoskeletal system, fractures and other diseases and so forth, that the veterinarian should screen out first before the animal does go to the chiropractor.
Want to buy a watch?
Okay. Senator Kubley, you want to address? We're not going to get much further, but Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been my bill. I guess, you know, it's been before Senator Vickerman's committee twice. You know, we have contended that, you know, that people, as a general rule, I think, have an opportunity to take their animals to seek the kind of care that they want, whether they, you know, I guess a couple of years ago, I didn't even know people sought chiropractic care for their animals. But it does seem to me that it's a basic right of the animal owner to take them to get the kind of chiropractic care, if that's the kind of service that they think the animal needs. You know, I think, you know, Senator Dill contends that they need to talk to a veterinarian, but most veterinarians, of which he, you know, Senator Dill mentioned, there are only 30 in Minnesota. That's approximately 2% of the veterinarians. Even if a veterinarian takes the chiropractic care courses that are available at the veterinary medical school, they really have no more understanding of what an animal needs in terms of chiropractic care than a chiropractor would without any training. So it would appear to me, Mr. Chair, that once the chiropractor receives the 210 hours that is required in this section, they would actually have a better understanding of problems that would need veterinary care than the average veterinary would that they need chiropractic care. So, you know, Oklahoma has sent us a letter indicating that they have had no problems with not referring animals to a veterinarian before they seek that kind of care. So I would contend, Mr. Chair and members, that that is not needed in Minnesota either.
well, members, we're going to have to adjourn at this point. I apologize, Senator Vickerman. So I know you've worked hard on this, and we have another meeting that a number of us have to attend, and then the conference committee is going to meet again in not too long. Senator Dill, let me just, and I've had people just talk to me briefly about the issue, so I don't know a lot about it. Just a small concern. It strikes me that your amendment is basically a policy amendment, and obviously in the committee we can do what we want, but I just offer that cautionary note. I know there was some discussion, Senator Tomasoni, relative to your amendment earlier with Senator Murphy's bill. That was just a policy amendment, and we went ahead with it.
It was finance, Mr. Chair.
Pardon?
It was finance.
Well, and I understand there was that argument as to whether or not there was a finance implication, but there was some discussion about whether or not it was policy. And so I want to make sure we just keep that in mind as we proceed in the discussion. Having said that, Senator Frederickson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there are other amendments to Senator Vickerman's bill, but it would appear to me that this discussion is going to be replayed on the floor whether or not Senator Dill's amendment gets offered and passed in this committee. So I was going to suggest we deal with the amendment now, either Senator Dill withdraw it and offer it on the floor, or that we vote on it now, knowing full well that the debate's going to reoccur when this bill gets to the floor.
Well, if members are ready to vote on the amendment right now, that's fine. If we're going to have a discussion about it, we don't have the time. I don't know, Senator Vickerman, are there other amendments to your bill? Anybody have any other amendments?
He's asking for more amendments to your bill.
Let's just vote.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I mean, do members wish, Senator Dill, do you want to actually offer the amendment, or do you want to?
I guess I'd like to take a vote on it.
Okay. Do you want any further discussion on the? Do people want to discuss this amendment further?
No. Well, Mr. Chairman.
Oh. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, if the horse's back is sagging and the veterinarian refers him to a chiropractor, how does the chiropractor fix the horse's back?
Well, like I said, if we're going into a discussion of the issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons you may need the veterinarian involved with any of these animals, you may need to sedate them to really do the kind of chiropractic manipulations that you need to do, and you may want to do some x-rays, and the veterinarian should see the animal first to make sure that it even needs chiropractic care. Yeah, maybe a fractured back or some other problems there that the veterinarian should sift out before it gets referred to the chiropractor.
Senator Anderson?
That's the way it is in almost every state that allows it. The only exception is Oklahoma. And even in Oklahoma, there is rules that have been promulgated where the veterinarian is involved with the sedation and the x-rays.
Mr. Chair, at the risk of taking time, I just want to mention my grandfather was a rancher in West Texas and was called the Cowboy Chiropractor. And I mean, that was his nickname. And you're giving me a look.
Well,
everyone laughed at my bill. It's only fair, you know. And so, or I should say during my bill. It wasn't at my bill. And Mr. Chair, and I mean seriously, he was a chiropractor, and I'm sure, but he wasn't a veterinarian, and I'm sure he made adjustments on his horses now and then too. I mean, isn't that the way it was always? You know, was that such a terrible thing?
Well, Mr. Chair, one of the most interesting contacts I heard was from a horse owner who had a horse who had a pretty valuable record, apparently, but he was spending his retirement years at stud service, and the owner was concerned that he was unable to carry out his responsibilities, and so, you know, they sought chiropractic care that put him back in shape for a couple more years. So.
Well, tell you what, I'm not sure, separate from anecdotes, we're having a full exposition of this. Senator Dill, if you want to take the chance to just put up for a vote, we can do it. Otherwise, we're going to adjourn the meeting. I need to see the division chairs across the hall immediately when the conference committee begins. Senator Dill?
Well, I'd like to have a vote here.
Okay. All right. So Senator Dill moves the whatever amendment it is, the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Further amendments on the bill? Okay. Senator Vickerman, is there further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Very briefly, I just want to thank Senator Vickerman for that. For the A8 amendment, which we worked on for many weeks to come up with a compromise language, and I appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, just a side note, if you had TV, you'd pick the paper up today. Gas is going to be $3.60 a gallon. What we're trying to do is hopefully lower that down to where it should be with the bill.
All right. All right.
Aye.
Aye.